Hey, everybody.
I'm Tara Luafemi.
And I'm Darian Carr, and we are Master of Architecture students at the GSD. The Nexus is produced in conjunction with a commitment by the Francis Loeb Library to acquire and create an open access bibliography of various media suggested by the community on the intersection between race and design.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode. Today we're going to be speaking to Rob Pro-Black Gibbs. Rob Gibbs is a visual artist and organizer who has transformed the cultural landscape of Boston through graffiti art since the early 90s. Gibbs grew up in Roxbury, Massachusetts during the hip-hop golden age and was in his teens when he found that the power of graffiti was a powerful form of self-expression. In 1991, Gibbs co-founded Artists for Humanity, an arts nonprofit that hires and teaches youth creative skills ranging from painting to screen printing to 3D model making. For the past 29 years, Pro-Black has served in many leadership roles at AFH and currently directs the Paint Studio. Pro-Black has a strong focus on arts education. He has been an adjunct educator for Boston Public Schools, conducted countless workshops, and is a formal and informal mentor to artists who are early and mid-career. Most recently, Rob served as a guest lecturer at Northeastern University for their Foundations of Black Culture hip-hop course. He curated the 2019 BAMS Fest Rep Your City exhibition and was invited to be one of two artists in residence with the Museum of Fine Arts Boston, making his the inaugural residency. Rob, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're so excited to have this conversation. You're someone I've been really wanting to have on the show for a while, ever since I heard about some of your work. So we're just going to kind of jump right into it. And my first question for you is, what is the vision of Blackness that you are trying to portray through your work? Is this a focus on the world as you see it, or how you would like it to be? And through this question, I'm really trying to get at two things, right? The first being that if the focus is on the world as you see it, then your work is more of emphasizing or drawing out underrepresented narratives that are already existing. If it's really more of how you would like the world to be, we're almost looking towards the future and you're sharing your vision for a more just future with us. And honestly, it could be both of those things. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that with us today.
Yeah, I'd have no problem with talking about that. And that's such a great question. Because to support your question, I want to say I do work that highlights the way we exist. To think about, you know, the underrepresentation or the future of, I think you have to just talk about what's current. And my work is definitely geared towards the audience and the communities that I've done it in. People that can look at these murals and call them mirrors at some point to see themselves represented. We have a balancing act to do in the city. And just in the culture period, and I feel like to be an advocate in hip hop, I have a responsibility. And with this skill set that gets a lot of good attention, I want to be able to like break it down to the point that I've recently started thinking about, like, wow, I've fell into the seat of being a storyteller almost. And so like the stories I'm telling would just be like conversations that I would have with an open end to this narrative so that people could collaborate and add on to it, because they may not be able to know the narrative or the details was to the particular pieces of work that I do, but it's open-ended for them to always talk about how they felt when they seen it. And just a way to be able to like add on to those conversations because they feel just building the morale or the boost of pride and being represented to a large scale extent, not just like, oh, that's cute. It's at a after school or it's temporary. It's like, nah, these are pieces that have like a permanence in the communities and almost become like landmarks. It's super cool. Like you can Google map a address and the work pops up. So that just means that, okay, we know what's happening around here or have an idea or a clue. So I feel like my view of Blackness in its current existence is just showing like who's here, who's moving and shaking, and just kind of like the nuances that I play into the pieces.
So for a lot of your murals, you're painting people. Are they based off of real people that you know, or are they kind of an amalgamation of like different traits and features from different people? I'm wondering how you come to the imagery that you tend to portray.
the imagery that I've been like recently, you know, depending on is just out of the innocence of a child and being able to like put into the future in a way where like, you know, young people are going to be able to resonate with seeing something that mirrors a little boy, a little girl they probably went to school with or they live around the way with or see themselves in it as. So I feel like when that messaging is there or that type of like, you know, representation is visible, it's not based off of anybody specifically. I don't have like models or things of that nature. I'm just definitely pulling together references where I kind of Frankenstein images where I'm like, okay, if I could exemplify happiness to the utmost, right, without clearly telling you to don't worry, be happy or be cliche about it, how could I do that? The expression of feeling, I think words just only limit what you come up with. There's not a like a lab that I'm sitting here and I'm trying to cook up, okay, this is who I have with the, with some type of intention. If I get your attention with like what I'm able to do when it comes down to the messaging, or we want to tell a story where like we are adding historical figures or people that are within the culture that you're going to be able to tie to and recognize, I want you to be familiar with the style. So the visual language is something that, you know, with me and the crew that I paint with, we've been very intentional about like how and what we put out, you know, the palettes and things of that nature that just celebrate and emphasize Black culture.
Yeah. And related to that point on culture, I wanted to ask how music affected how you are building this worldview, how you're building these things and integrating them into your work. You mentioned style and how you're expressing, and I know graffiti is a main part of a lot of the work you do. So I was wondering if you could speak to music in relation to how it relates to your understanding of your identity as a person who's Black and a person as a creative.
Oh man, music, you know, Black culture and Black people are the archetypes to a lot of music that we rock with. You know what I mean? Hip hop being something that is the metronome to my work. I see a lot of relevance in it. It's almost like for these songs that don't have visuals to them, your imagination that gets sparked or the encouragement that you would have from it would almost be like the visual or the music video or the album cover, the single album cover to these particular tracks or a series of tracks. So just imagine if like all the music I listened to, I made into a playlist, and then that playlist had a playlist cover. Whatever pieces that I create definitely reflect from, you know, the music that drives me to kind of tell some of that narrative. I think some of the stories that we can relate to are embedded in the beat. And I feel like when it's, you know, delivered in that particular manner, this is just a support to that. And music has a high, high, high influence on what I do, man. I can't live without it. I was bumping beats before we got into this interview just to get my mind right, because depending on the artist I'm in the mood to listen to, man, it really gets my mind, like, you know, thinking in that path, whether it's instrumental or vocal.
Yeah, it reminds me of sampling and kind of just the act of taking stories and recontextualizing them through a medium, whether that be sound or paint. And I was wondering if you could kind of speak to your work in relation to sampling and how the act of bringing together stories is becoming materialized through the way you approach your visual medium.
Such an interesting comparison to sampling. I think with sampling and the things that were created to invent new pieces, you have to give like these stories the time that it deserves, whether you're living with it or you're experiencing it in a way to hit the rest of the world with what I call like the Sankofa spirit, you know, to be able to look back at your past, to be able to contribute to a brighter future would be the ultimate way that, you know, you could take a saying from something you heard your grandfather say, your pops would always tell you, and then put it in a line, or you could pull a line from like a song and title it as a piece. All this stuff is just like a variety of ways of like inspiration and how I pull all that stuff together, man. I would say like, if you look at some of the nuances in the work that I do, whether it's like the clothing that the characters are wearing, something that's probably in representation of like the album artwork that was out there, anything that can tie like the mood to the influence so that people can connect to it and you can build upon that. These old stories are told in just different ways. If you take the responsibility of a griot, your responsibility is to pass on those stories so that others could contribute to it. and on a large platform like doing murals or in the artwork that I'm doing, I'm just trying to activate space and conversation so that, like, you know, people could talk to whatever it is that I'm kind of like, you know, staring them towards, or at least feel good in a place.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a great comparison because it goes into something that I was very interested in asking you about, which is your interest in graffiti and like what first drew you to graffiti and making murals. You know, when we think about Basquiat, Basquiat also had done album covers, but he was known for also doing graffiti, Rimmelzi as well, and all of that. So I'm curious as to what first drew you to graffiti as a medium. I'm very interested in this idea about the work you're making almost becoming this large plastered album cover, in a sense.
Man, if I could tell you what sparked my interest in making graffiti happen, I felt like just looking at all the disciplines and the culture, there was something that I had to pick that I can be good at, you know? And I felt like when I seen my first piece of graffiti or I seen it like activated in the space, I was like, wow, this is a play on the alphabet. And the alphabet, regardless of what language you translate it to, is universal. In the hip-hop culture, I was like, damn, graffiti is hip-hop's alphabet, you know? Now, just imagine the alphabet with accessories and how you could take the words from a DJ that gets cut up and you can put it in the outline of a piece. You can add an accessory to that piece where, you know, you see the B-boys and the B-girls on the end, which, you know, characters that you add onto the piece, the lyrics that an MC's rapping, you can do a whole composition or a whole mural from it. So I was exposed to graffiti that was like from around the world through a book called Aerosol Art. And it was from those pages that I was looking at and digesting that, like, I wanted to see myself do graffiti on a higher level. And for, you know, these men and women that were in the Aerosol Art book, I was modeling what I thought was the way, the blueprint, you know what I mean? Like, I even compare it to like hieroglyphics, you know, to a sense where, like, you know, with the aerosol, we're putting the marks on the wall with, you know, we're highlighting culture. And within graffiti, you know, there's the individual that really gets, you know, big on their name, but then there's the other graffiti writers that celebrate the culture. And I've been turned on by participating and celebrating the culture by doing these larger mural compositions. We call them productions, you know what I mean? And in those productions, it's a combination of, like, you know, portraits, characters, letters, background, very scenic, like, you know, taking up the entire wall space from top to bottom, left to right. Continuing on that album cover theory, like if you had opened up the album cover and it was like a 2-page spread or a 3-page fold out, these productions mirrored imaging that was like, you know, continuing that story where, like, if you had a picture that was worth 1,000 words, but it can't just exist on one picture. It has to be in a series of pictures. You understand? So I felt like in the ways that I was being exposed to graffiti and just seeing it in its large scale or on its like massive platform, which, like, you know, the trains with a canvas in New York that were moving around the Iron Worm. And, you know, these guys and girls was risking it all to be represented all over the city. But then you seen these handball courts that had more of a, you know, permanent setting and just highlighted a style that celebrated the culture that made you feel like when you looked at it, you knew what it was. When you posed in front of it, you probably had your arms folded. You know what I mean? Like, a compliment to all these pieces is how many footprints you see on the wall because you know people were posing with it, you know? So, always been turned on about knowing that, you know, black and brown people produce these pieces and seeing them in the neighborhoods, like these were our heroes, you know? And to want to do that, it was like an effort where nobody's going to know who you are because when you walk away from it and you see everybody else enjoying it, it was just something that I felt like it was just gratification on another level. Where, like, I did something that everybody can enjoy. I did something that everybody can just stop and take the time to look at as if they was looking at a movie screen or something like that. You know, like, you get a certain energy from that, man. And when you do it one time, it's like a bug. You got to just keep knocking it out, keep doing it. And you almost feel like you disciplined yourself to create something to finish. So I felt like that's what turned me on about graffiti, man, was just the urgency to put it up, walk away from it, and then watch it live.
Yeah, you know, there's so many, wow, there's so many follow-ups I'm thinking of right now. I'm just going to start spitting them out. So the first one I'm thinking about is, you know, I remember when we used to get CDs and you pull out that little booklet and that's where you see all the lyrics and, you know, they'll have other visuals in there and stuff like that. And those little extra pullouts were what really allowed you to follow along with the music. So it's really beautiful to me that you're describing these as like a production that allows people to really participate in the work, you know, in taking part in taking photos of themselves there and all of that. So that's already something that I'm like, there's already such an amazing comparison between this audio culture and how we now see it like as a visual culture. The next thing I'm also thinking about is this whole idea of graffiti. And I don't even know how I want to describe it. Like almost like in architecture, we have what these things like what's like post-occupancy, like evaluations or something like that, where afterwards, like you kind of determine how successful the building is by how much energy it saves or how people are using it. And it's amazing how with graffiti, you can kind of tell how successful it is to relating to the community it's part of by like the physical artifacts of what's left behind. It's like, you know, when players are leaving like a locker room and they all will like hit a wall or something. And over time, the dents of the different hands that have been there kind of show up on the wall. So it's amazing that the art is creating that sort of culture where you can literally trace the history of the work and then the people who have now interacted with the work, which is like a really, really beautiful way of relating. And it's so interesting because, you know, graffiti and murals are always so tied to the neighborhoods they're in. They're tied to the buildings they're in. Like you said, you know, when people are doing graffiti on the train, it's like it's a moving work of art that gets to travel across the city. But in a neighborhood, it has to speak to the architecture. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. How do you choose your sites for the work that you make? How do you decide where you want to put it? All of that. Like, what do you consider an amazing canvas? Do you ever actually look for like a wall that looks almost completely blank? Or do you want a wall that already gets a lot of attention, like near a basketball court? And then you're like, this is where I want to make a like almost like a love letter to my neighborhood or my community.
That's such a, you're right, we're vibing right now, like you're talking, you're speaking my language. So I think what's cool about everything that you're saying, and it's such an amazing question, because what happens when you do the origins of like scoping out a spot, you're definitely taking the responsibility of a curator, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people wouldn't even think that it's like that, but you are in some way, shape, or form curating what's happening. Now, as much as the tag has been downplayed to be vandalism and all this other stuff, it's delinquents in the culture, right? Mm-hmm. But in the same breath, like I felt like an artist just wanted to try something out and be like, yo, if I had put something right here, I want to see how long it lasts, what it does, and how would it live in this particular space? Or it might be like, you know, like you show up at a party, there's other tags on there, and you just kind of adding on to that to let people know, like, yo, I've been here. I think once you mature as a graffiti writer, you want more than just putting your name up everywhere, right? And you want to be a contributor to wherever you're putting it at to some degree. I think it's just the natural progression. Like I said, there's writers that really celebrate their name and, you know, the enthusiasts behind letters. And then there's others that celebrate the culture. And I feel like for something that you don't get taught in school, can't get a degree behind, this is something that's like ground level. It's like grassroots. Mm-hmm. You got to know somebody that, you know what I mean? Like there's yeah, not a one-on-one. There's books and all that other stuff now. And that's cool for like the little kids. But when you wanted to take to this form, you had to like really get your chops sharp and finding spots where, like, you know, you live in the neighborhoods that, you know, weren't developed yet before gentrification and all that other stuff. You were hitting spots where, like, were probably active, you know, drug houses or anything, like, you know, crack houses, or where fiends just kind of went off, or just buildings where, like, this wasn't getting no attention and they were just left there. And you didn't know why it was abandoned, but you know there's some dope walls on the perimeter. So you went there and you practice. You try to get it sharp. You have your little gallery. You don't got to look over your shoulder. You're in your own neighborhood. So you know what I mean? 9 out of 10 for you to get ran up on, you know, the politics of the spot. But then when you start taking it to places where more people are seeing what you're able to do, you're a little more confident about what you're able to deliver. And then you become intentional with where you put it. And when you travel in and out of your city, you go to other places representing the city with the style, with your craftsmanship, how sharp you lay it down and your intention. So the more people get to recognize your skill set, you know, I think the evolution of what you're able to do, man, you start to develop the same practices that like a studio artist would have, but your studio is on the street. Your gallery mm-hmm. is the neighborhood. You know what I mean? And then when you start to go on a larger platform, you start to think, okay, this is the type of work that I've done that's been affecting people this particular way. How or what could I do, to your point, leave a love letter or, you know, put a pill in the applesauce or,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? Like what I'm doing with my murals, I'm like, I'm trying to raise my daughter in a way that I'm putting messaging in the murals where she's 3 years old right now. So the things that I could tell her, she might not be able to digest, but when she grows up and she grows with these pieces and she looks at them, whether she's with her friends or other family members and things of that nature, she's going to be like, oh, damn, this is what my dad was trying to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And other kids that'll grow up like her at this time where, like, you know, there's beautiful distractions, man. So I just want to make sure that, like, whatever I'm doing to help people know that we're here and that we exist as the type of artist that I made a choice to be, man, like my choice of medium isn't one that, like, you know, is celebrated in a way where, like, you know, I can go in a gallery and be like, yeah, I'm a graffiti writer, and you get the stank look. And it's cool because, like, what makes, which, you know, when any other artist calls themselves better than the other, we all manipulated a medium to be able to express ourselves, to do something that's going to last through time, you know?
Yeah.
Looking at walls and things of that nature, the larger you go, the more you start to pay attention to, like, little things that could contribute versus take away, you know, because I have a totally different look on and a view on, like, buildings and places to paint now. And it's not even about being picky. It's just about making sure that it fits right here. Like, it works. You know, there's for it to be like a hot spot that everybody goes to, that just means it's a target for God knows what. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's somewhere where it's like it's set in its place, it's controlled, it might shed light on that area so that the bad things that would happen around there could change around and people respect it. That's what it's about, man. But we also got to be careful as well because, like, you know, we're putting this priceless artwork on the building and it's raising its value. And what's mm-hmm. happening now when the artwork on the building, which is one of its kind, is raising the value. It's not an advertisement. It's artwork, you know. It might be raising the rent in some of these buildings, you know what I'm saying, and pushing some of the people that live in it out. Unfortunately, because there's this attraction that made this spot that probably didn't have that type of attention something now, you know? So it's a responsibility to pay attention to, nonetheless.
Yeah, that's amazing because, you know, it's something I actually have not thought about. It's like, you know, graffiti, it's such an interesting art form because it's respected sometimes, disrespected other times. And you literally are constantly doing a balancing act between, like, you want to speak to your community. If your community doesn't like it, everybody will know, right? But also if, like, I don't know, the person who owns the building doesn't like it, they'll paint over it. But then if it starts bringing them good attention, then they'll keep it, right? But then that can also be negative. So it's such a weird act of, like, okay, you have to think about literally the people who live there. How is this going to benefit them? How could it hurt them? You probably get the most instant feedback on your art, you know, if it's graffiti, right? Because if people don't like it, someone will just put something else over it. They're like, this is so bad. Or people will literally just spray paint next to it, like, this sucks. You know, so, like, you are literally getting immediate feedback from your audience versus, like, an architecture and stuff like that. If a building doesn't work, you might not find out instantly, or, like, it's too late. It's expensive. It's there already. But it's funny that this form of art can accentuate a building. And, you know, a question that I actually had for you, which really relates to what we were just talking about, is, you know, Basquiat's the exception where, and it wasn't even while he was alive, really. It was more so after he died that his work became, like, everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. This is, like, high art now, you know, and it's selling for all this sort of money. Mm-hmm. But is that something that we want? Do we want graffiti to be fully accepted? Like, I feel like if it becomes fully accepted, then it's going to succumb to the art world and the way the art world works, where, you know, it'll kind of lose its authenticity. But I liked how you said that graffiti artists themselves are curators. They have their own art style and their own artistic practice that does not really require the sort of folding into the institution of art that already exists through museum spaces and all of that. But I'm just curious to hear, like, what are your thoughts? I think it's the most public form of art. And in order for it to stay like a public art form, it has to be accepted so that it's allowed to stay up and not constantly taken down. Mm-hmm. Once it becomes that form of legitimized, then, you know, we run into all the other stuff we've already talked about. I'm curious as to like what some of your thoughts are on that.
Here's some of my thoughts in reference to that question, just thinking about it, because I've never really like put it in too much of perspective, because like if I personally been around the world doing graffiti, then the success of it speaks beyond me. If there are companies that are tailoring paint, specializing spray paint for us to use to execute our the type of styles and work that we do, it's done what it needed to do, man. There's corporate paint companies that make paint specifically for graffiti writers. They celebrate the culture in such a way where, like, you know, if you go to like a company called Belton or Molotov, they have an abandoned train on their site or at their site that they bring graffiti artists from around the world to showcase, you know what I mean, and exhibit. Mm-hmm. That crossover from the walls and the street to the gallery is a question of, you know, taste. And if you're looking for acceptance, which, you know, really doesn't bother me either way, like for this form of art that happens on the street to be called street art now, that's just the world showing, well, we're comfortable with calling it this versus that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So a lot of the street artists who do very well with the medium are graffiti writers. You know what I mean? It's undeniable. Like, we don't want to be grouped into a big melting pot to say what are the haves and have nots. But I think, like, for anybody that's reached out to a bigger audience, you know what I mean? I think it's only natural for, like, anybody who was personally pursuing it to dive into what it would probably take to fill a gallery or to do a show. It doesn't necessarily measure whether you're successful or not, because you could fill a gallery show and nobody buys one piece in there. You know what I'm saying? It's the same when you got pieces all over the city or all over in your neighborhood and everybody knows you, but like, are you necessarily able to put food on your table? Are you able to live off of your craft? You know what I'm saying? And I think sometimes with such an eat what you kill mentality, you know, I would just say we eat what we kill to protect what we love. I never would want to exploit the culture in a way where, like, you know, like it's made its crossovers. There's been video games, there's apps, you know what I mean? There's characters that play towards what graffiti does, you know what I mean? I just think it has to debunk the bad boy mentality behind it, you know what I mean? Because that's the adolescence in the culture. Like, it is a rebel of, it's a rebellion against something. There is guerrilla art that exists, you know what I mean? There's ways of, like, bombing and hitting the, you know, the trussles and things of that nature. That's all in the come up. But at what point do you become grown, or you grow old with it and measure your level of success? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or what the successes are. Like, if I meet an old graph writer and they got the health, they made it to me. You know what I'm saying? Because we're not using a medium that's safe enough to live long. You get what I'm saying? If you're not protecting yourself. But the success of it from being on the street in the gallery or vice versa, man, it's all to the eyes of the beholder. I'm not too sold on, like, what the gallery world is, because it's a whole different monster. There's a different set of rules. And it doesn't necessarily make one artist more talented than the other. Because whatever the wave is, whatever the gimmick is, whatever is the hot thing, you're going to find a lot of artists that trend or lean towards that practice. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I feel like the originality, the representation of culture, the timelessness of a piece, regardless of what type of artist you are, that audience that you touch, man, is, you know, subject to the individual that's checking it out. I would love to be celebrated in all spots, right? But, you know, there's a translation that you have to have in your work that speaks to everybody, so it's not looked down upon. It's just as celebrated as, you know, an older piece from whoever is in that museum. You know what I mean? Does it stand the quality in the hands of time? And, like, if you look at the Future of Writing exhibit at the MFA, it's a perfect example of that. You know, that body of work, that dynasty was a 5-year period. 5 years, you know, and here it is in an institution where everybody's just breaking their neck to be like, yo, this is a part of our culture. This is American. You know what I mean? Like all this good stuff. It's cool to see like certain artists make that appeal and just influence a whole nother, you know, generation or group of folks. I just think you can't get caught up in the hearsay. You got to do what feels right and lasts throughout the time. And yeah, that success, I guess, just comes from what your intentions are as living as an artist, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you seem to already almost have this kind of foresight since you were a teenager when you and your friends started Artists for Humanity. You were already thinking about how can we start basically cultivating our own artistic practice that relates to our own community, that seeks success within our community, but that can also be taken elsewhere. Can you talk a little bit about when you started Artists for Humanity, what you were thinking and what was the decision behind it?
Mm. When we started Artists for Humanity, before we even was calling it Artists for Humanity, just imagine like you had a practicing artist, our executive director now, mm-hmm. and, you know, she was going to schools, you know, fulfilling the need for art to be in the school system. You know, art wasn't in the school system in the late 80s. It just wasn't a class. It wasn't a elective, none of that. And so you had somebody that seen the need and brought it. And we loved how that felt because, you know, we were just all over the place doing all types of things, man. Young boys trying to channel that energy, you know what I mean? Yeah. Whether we were rapping, whether we was like hanging out in front of the school or doing anything that made sense to, what was the word? Like to represent. Whatever represent meant, you had to do it, right? Yeah, I'm out here, I'm representing. Like what? You know, like, yo, I'm keeping it real. I'm representing. Yo, yeah. what does that mean? You know what I'm saying? So like, so you got to sit there and just kind of dive into what that is. You get older and you're like, oh man, we started something with somebody that gave us an opportunity and a chance to not only discover our voice, but to honor a skill set, to honor a practice. We wasn't doing like art for art's sake. We were like helping her with commission. And just knowing that, like, you know, things that would honor a deadline and knowing the with the feeling of finishing a project and you're doing something that like that's adding to the world, not taking away from it. Or like, you know, the gratification just came from like, yo, we created that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think when it came down to doing these projects and Susan introducing us to this creative lifestyle, this practice, this way where we could practice like, you know, being these ill dudes that got a studio or access to a studio. And then we were hopping out on the scene sharp as a tack. You know what I mean? Very, mm-hmm. very like where are these dudes practicing that? Because, you know, when we go on the street, we got like a little routine, but we're not in art school. So what's happening? And I felt like when we were doing it because it felt good. It felt right. It felt like we were doing something that was like outside of the norm, but we wasn't contributing to being a stereotype, getting ran up on by police or possibly being locked up for the rest of your, like, you know, your young adult life. We were doing things that were like, that the potential of it turned into what we've known to be our life work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we've always wanted people down with us. We always wanted it to be larger than us. Because we just knew that many people, you know?
Yeah.
And the feeling that you have right now that we're like, we're able to give funding to hire teenagers about close to 400 a year to give them jobs where they're like contributors to their household or like, you know, it's their first job ever or we're helping them understand what it's like to honor a commitment. It ain't even about being an artist at the end of the day. It's just about like, yo, how are you developing yourself to be a better human being? You know,
mm-hmm.
Not a lazy learner. You know what I'm saying? Like somebody that's just active in any way, shape or form and not riling them up to do anything to add to a statistic or anything of that nature. So when we were doing this, not knowing that it was going to unlock into this experience that 30 years later, we still were still rocking. It just felt good. And it was like our escape from being on the street for those 4 or 3 hours or whatever that weekend was, we airbrushing shirts and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And to earn the hardest thing, which is to do when you're younger, which is like your parents' trust. So all those practices that mold us into the adults that we are right now was just the reason why what Artists for Humanity has grown into and what it embodied, we stuck to our guns and just went hard for it. And you got the right people that believe in the right opportunities working together to give the city what it needed, you know, for its youth. And it felt good to be like in the driver's seat to do that.
There's a couple things that are really interesting about that to me. So one thing that I think is very common in general, and especially in communities of color, is like our parents kind of thinking that to be an artist is not a viable way to live, right? So you're already instilling very young that you're like, no, it is possible to be a creative and to sustain yourself off of that in a positive way. So I think that's amazing, right? You're also offering teenagers, young people a living wage, allowing them to contribute. And then you're also, what you did is, so what Susan had done for you is kind of now the role you're doing for other people. So my next question is, so Artists for Humanity, when did you guys get your first like physical home? And how did the process of being involved in designing that physical space kind of push the bounds of your own artistic practice? You already were always engaged with physical space, you know, as a graffiti artist, but this kind of took on a different form where you got to start from the beginning. Were you thinking about murals and graffiti and all of that as you were designing the space? What were you really thinking about?
I think we were just thinking about the success of the program through, like, you know, that whole sweat equity model, like hard work, and then just keeping it simple to start in a place that was a studio that was as small as a 2-car garage with like 7 to 8 teenage dudes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're listening to Ghetto Boys, painting on doors and chairs and doing everything that could come to our imagination with Susan's support. She gave us the keys to a studio, which was like the illest thing that happened when you're young. You got keys to some spot other than your house. You understand?
Yeah.
It was like getting the keys to a vehicle that we were like, all right, all of us are going to drive this and we're going to take turns. We're going to make sure that this is kept well and run it. You know what I mean? And so we've naturally went from that small spot to like 10,000 square feet. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, gracefully rented that spot for like real, real decent, next to nothing rent to continue our practice and you know, expand our program from the 10,000 square feet and went to 30,000 between 2 floors. And then, you know, this trend started to happen with the internet. And so us moving around, it got kind of tiring to always get somewhere and try to claim it or reclaim it as home. You know what I mean? We'll get in the dustiest of spots, paint everything, you know, clean the bathrooms, like, you know, these old, old industrial factory spots, man. And so living like, you know, true artists.
Yeah.
You go somewhere and you take something that's just not as polished and you turn it into that diamond, you know? The cool thing about rocking with Susan as long as we have is that she's had wild ideas to be like, yo, you know, at some point you're going to get tired of bouncing from A to B. Why don't we just own something? And for where the Epicenter exists at right now, there was one summer that, like, you know, the paint studio that I ran got operated out of there. And the one thing that I knew is that, like, the vibe was real. It was one of the last, like, horse barns that, not horse barns, but like the stable where they kept horses at traveling in the streets.
Yeah.
Over there in Southie, and like in the summertime when it got hot, it just smelled horrible. You know what I mean? Because you could still smell the remnants of what them homeboys left. So that site that I operated the paint studio out of and just the vibe that got set there, when it got torn down and built up again, there were different intentions of what the building needed to represent. In reference to like how we just existed as people and as an organization. And I knew one thing that she've always talked about with us. And, you know, we young brothers from the hood, man, we're not thinking about the environment. We're not thinking about our carbon footprint.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Recycling and things of that nature. And like she had the wild concept of just wanting to build something that's as simple as 4 walls, like a big box, you know what I'm saying? Where it's like a blank canvas for multi-purpose and multiple reasons. And then put some solar panels on top of the building. So we're generating our own energy. We're looking like, I mean, you can only imagine how people were probably looking at her at the time. Where it's like, yo, you know, okay, you got somebody that got this hippie concept of just saving the planet all the time and wanting to do this with the state of an art building and this, that, and the third. Yeah. And like, believe it or not, when everything was said and done and the way that the building got built and just taking everything that was on the inside aesthetically and making sure that it was done, you know, with the artist's integrity of recycling and reclaiming things, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the fly ash that was used to make the concrete, or the fact that a building that large had no damn AC in it for years, you know, and, mm-hmm. and the air system, the solar panels on the top, the police windshields being used as an aesthetic for the mezzanine, and just an open concept where there was only windows on the north and the south side of the building because the, you know, the sun went up on one side and went down in the other, and all the walls are painted white. So wherever the sun was popping in the building, it would reflect off of the white walls, giving a maximum visibility without having a light on, even though we're producing electricity.
Yeah.
Like crazy selling it back to the companies. So this concept, all of a sudden, it just made too much sense. And like, you know, the building has been LEED Platinum certified, and it was one of its kind at the time that, you know, it was developed. Mm-hmm. To continue that and to be artists for humanity, it was like holding the program accountable to its title.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, here we running this beautiful program. We're like raising kids in the city and contributing to just, you know, this new school workforce. We're like this segue between high school and college and the rest of the world. You know what I mean? And we're giving like different type of life experiences, but we're responsible. You know what I mean? We're like socially conscious, but on like a global sense, you know what I'm saying? Where it was just bigger than what we were doing in the city and playing those politics. It was like, nah, here's how we're contributing to the planet. That to me just said a whole lot, man. Like, you know, so being introduced to that way of thinking, you know what I mean? The contribution to the space, like whatever we did just came natural because it was just like, you felt like you were doing the best thing possible. And mm-hmm. just being able to talk about that stuff as a dude who wasn't raised to have those ideas, just to share those so that we got like, you know, more responsible individuals contributing to that. So when it came down to like the development of the space, those facts, I think like, you know, little dudes and girls like to geek out over like the facts on the things that they got, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, I got these sneakers, they got the 300 thread count of a da 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 da, you know, like breaking down stuff like that to me was just like, it was just ill because you found out more other than which is like put in front of you, or you're not distracted easily by the things that were put out there to, you know, to hold us down.
Yeah.
And the most important part in reference to this space is having a safe enough space to help create this vibe, to contribute to this culture, to have like this practice where like I'm talking to teenagers and I want them to feel like it was their home away from home. So aesthetically, the building had a responsibility, but on the inside, I felt like it needed to be taken a step further so that when you walk in here, you were like, word, okay, the right people in here doing the right things. And so that's just as important, because you can have a building and it can be anything that you want it to be, but just to have that culture cultivated in there and to have that safe enough space for people to grow, be vulnerable. I mean, you know, you got teenage artists that are doing this for the first time around each other, and they're hard, yo. Imagine you 14 years old and you doing a self-portrait next to somebody who's like, you know, 16 and been doing it for years, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know, like teenagers are ill. Yo, that sucks. You know what I'm like just
ruthless.
Imagine ruthless. And the craziest amount of honesty, just in the way where they're vulnerable at, they do anything and everything to just, as we would say back in the day, keep it real.
Yeah.
Yo, they in there keeping it real. And we're giving them a space to do that. So
I feel like it makes so much sense too, just like with what we were talking about earlier in the conversation and like the idea of like finding and curating walls as canvases, because like in like architectural traditions, like modernism, sometimes like a wall is just supposed to be plain, and like a wall is just a wall, and like that's it. But I'm looking at your work and I'm like, the wall's never just a wall. Like, the wall is a canvas. The wall is an opportunity to be empathetic, whether that's with a community or whether with that's like with the world and like the context of climate and sustainability. And having the expansion of like that one little surface as an opportunity to be empathetic about people mm-hmm. that relate to that surface on like different scales. And I'm thinking about even just like your use of color in the background. I'm like, am I making this up? But it almost seems like I'm looking at the piece you did with the girl with the Roxbury jersey dress on and like the key in the background that has like this outer space thing. And I'm like, it's almost like it just puts a hole in the wall and it's a portal into somewhere else. And it's like so much deeper than a wall rather than that surface. And even looking at your other work, sometimes the way you're using colors in the background, that it's like, it's never flat, you know? And I was wondering if I'm making that up or if you could, if that's intentional, or like if you could speak to that a little bit.
You should see me right now. I look like a mad scientist. I'm like, yes. I think what's cool about what you're saying, man, and I'm trying not to cry on this mic, like, word, you get it. You know what I mean? With the keyhole at the school, if there was a visual representation of Q-Tip's lyric from Check and Rhyme, when he starts off the verse, like, well, if knowledge is the key, well, then show me the lock. Mm. And I just so happened to be placing, you know, the little girl on at my alma mater at the high school I went to. So what better place to highlight that lyric that, you know, may not be covered in class at all, but if knowledge is the key, then show me the lock. You know what I mean? And she's floating out of this portal, like you said, where like I'm playing with the architecture in a way where it's like, I didn't want to paint the wall left to right, top to bottom in its entirety. I want to celebrate the architecture, you know, and just carve a little, like, you know, I had something this big to put something on. Let me give you a piece of where it's coming from, because that imagination to be unlocked is timeless, you know. The same with the piece that you probably would see with the little brother and a sister, you know, it's intentional. Like where I stood back and looked at this entire wall, there was a piece that was previously there that like it stood out, but it went with the area. And so my intention was to make sure that I put down a neutral background to match the buildings to the left and the right of it. Come to find out that color is named Patience. It was a color on the swatch. It was called Patience. I was like, yeah, this is it right here. Let's go. So I was like, am I going to build a manifesto based on colors that I use? But like, I love to play off the environment that the pieces are being, because now what you would naturally do in that white box in the gallery, right? Where you got a wall, you have a space, you have way to curate it. I have a piece that's as big as a building and I have to curate it into the neighborhood that it exists in. You know, the block that is going to live and breathe on. I have to be intentional with making sure that it complements the area and it helps people feel like they're going somewhere or going to it or living with it, you know, versus, oh, what the hell is that? You know, like it's a neck snap or something crazy. Like, nah, this is going to be a backdrop to a lot of things. I can't tell you what it is. But seeing how it's been popping up and a lot of things, or like the protests recently and all that stuff. Like, I was like, damn, I wonder if the march was intentional to go by this particular piece, or you just can't help but to go by it. It's such a cool observation, but yet like it's the biggest challenge, because you almost think when you see a building now or you see a wall, I look at walls that are blank. I'm like, yo, it's perfect already. Whatever I'm gonna do to it has to complement or add on to it. It's a compliment. It's a complementary to the architecture. You know what I mean? My first line is actually the fifth line, because it's four sides of the wall. I could go on for days about what I think about when it comes down to things, but I just be like, listen, man, there's something that you do, or there's something magical that happens when you respect and honor what you approach, because I'm not coming to conquer anything. You know what I'm saying? And maybe that's what my evolution as a graffiti writer came from, where I was like, yo, I'm out to destroy. I'm gonna kill everything. Like, and that's only because I done heard it in the documentary where this dude was like, yo, I'm gonna smash everything moving. And I was like, nah, I don't wanna smash it, because we gotta live here. So, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. If it's broke up, we can't celebrate it. We don't have anything else. It's not about when I walk away from it, no one else can walk up to it. It should continue or be continuous. So you know, that's definitely like something that is super cool at the end of the day, is when you start to look at the bigger picture. And when I say bigger, it's like bigger in the sense where like you see videos where there's drone shots now of the work and things of that nature, and you get to see it in context, you know, where like, oh man, just imagine if I was riding a plane, or if I was sitting on the top of that drone, or I was in a building high enough and I seen this in context. Word, it matches, it goes, it does this, it does that. You know, it's just as intentional as it is when I go out the crib, man, and it's like summertime. I'm not putting on ski boots and snow pants in the heat. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to make sure it's all good, man.
Yeah. The other question I have, it's not even a question. I'm like, man, there's a portal. Like, there's just like a whole world. like you could just enter into it. Like, you know? Hey. That's so dope.
Thanks, man. Now, that's how it was, what happened, not by accident, but because of what the building told me to do. Like, you know, a sketch or a composite of what you're planning to create for, it's flat. You know, it's stiff. You're doing it on the computer or you're doing it on paper. It's 2D. But then when you start to put it in the space, like with the first Breathe Life, I was like, damn, how am I going to paint this whole building? And I was like, wait a minute. I'll just cut it in half like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, corner to corner. You know, that's half. Like, you know, like, so people, they're like, what do you mean? It's not directly down the middle. I was like, no, it's half like when you buy a flat screen TV. Like, you know, that's not 54 inches left to right. It's corner to corner. Yeah. And so I separated the building that way, but the kid blowing into the Nintendo cartridge was him exploding that side of the building going into the Hubble Galaxy. You know, the second time around, it was celebrating what you would probably see in a church with the stained glass, having like some reflection of the universe in that. Because in most churches we go to, you look at those stained glasses, those stories that are being depicted about the Bible or that's in it, none of it looks like us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As many funerals as I've been to and looked at the stained glass, because I don't want to be looking down crying. I look up and I'm like, all the people in the church don't look like what's going on in the stained glass. What's happening? So when I have the opportunity to paint across the street from a church, guess what I'm doing? You know what I mean? And then again, going back to my high school and looking at this spot that's like, whenever it was built at a time when, you know, that type of concrete and all that other stuff was crazy. So I was like, what could I do to add on to it? Let alone someone in the city gave us permission to reclaim the space in the back so that we can like redirect the activity that was going on back there. And then it built up from there, where like Madison Park now is a mural site. Like, people travel there to do tours now because it's nothing but opportunity. And it's the same to take these spots. Or even at the underground ink block, you know, that's under a highway passage. It's a whole exit off of a highway where under it, all types of activity that was crazy is now different. You know, you got like rock gardens. It's all lit. There's like soul cycling classes that happen out there now. And it's all curated with artwork that we put and placed around there. So it's the same as if you had a gallery and a gallery was your representative, but it's on the street. And your representatives are the people that encounter it. And that's how you're doing it. You know what I mean? That's where you're going larger than life. That's when you have an exchange. That's when you have a platform where like people from around the world, you can import artists at this point. You know, if I got my man from Puerto Rico who got something to do and he needs something larger than life to express his voice on, to inspire everybody that he can speak to on that platform, guess what we're doing it at? Because we got that green light. So it's cool to see all of it kind of come together, man, and just know that Boston is beautifully small. Having the confidence to go to another city or another part of the world and push up the same work ethic and lay it down for our people, you know what I mean? Make it happen.
Mm-hmm. How can we use this platform to help the work that you're doing with Artists for Humanity or anything like that? Is there any plug that you can give us for, like, you know, like ways to contribute, any fundraisers? How can we use where we are to really help out?
Oh man, just continue to check out what we're doing and put the plug and just have conversations about what we're doing, man. We have, you know, a website, www.afhboston.org. We got social media handles that are all AFH Boston related. And just check out our kids, man. We do work for hire. You know what I mean? So hire us. We offer a variety of services. We can be damn near one-stop shop for your creative needs. And it's all done and powered by young people. So, you know, we're not asking for anything in reference to, you know, detailed information yet. We just need the attention. Hire us. Give our kids that experience that they're going to need to change their lives, man. So check us out, www.afhboston.org.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been amazing.
You got it. You got it. And thank you, Tara. Thank you, Darren.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Tara Luafemi.
And I'm Darren Carr.
And you've been listening to The Nexus, a product of the African American Design Nexus at the Harvard Graduate School of Design. Today's episode was produced and edited by Maggie Janik, and we would like to thank DJ Eway for our theme music. To learn more about the African American Design Nexus, visit us online at aadn.gsd.harvard.edu.